Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More with Francisco Fragonio Peña. Active citizens build resilient cities.
Disaster can happen anywhere, at any time. They don't have any geographical boundaries, politics, holidays, or social classes. Disasters show zero remorse to develop or to undevelop countries. Earthquakes, tsunamis, landslides, floods, wildfires, sea level rise, and human-related accidents like toxic explosion or radioactive release can trigger damage or destroy infrastructure, disrupt commerce, activity, and transportation services, diminish economic prosperity, poison the environment, and in some cases, even death. For this reason, disaster risk assessments are important at the national and cross-border level to have a better understanding of the susceptibility and level of risk in order to implement a better prevention strategy and offer long-term solutions. Have you ever wondered how countries cooperate to prevent and deal with cross-border natural disasters? Would you like to understand how an earthquake or flood risk assessment is structured? Ways to improve preparedness when disaster strikes? Welcome to Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More weekly podcast. My name is Rossella Biaggi and I will be your host for today. In today's show, we will complete the overview of the United Nations National Disaster Risk Assessment Report on Section 2, Cross-Border Risk Assessment, and Section 3, Hazard-Specific Risk Assessment.
Disaster risk assessments are the blueprint, the cornerstone, the foundation of disaster prevention. Without it, countries are blindfolded. In other words, they simply cannot take effective action to lessen the damaging effects. Think about the Netherlands.
I got an idea!
Back at the time, in 1953, they suffered the worst flood in their history, recording about 2,000 deaths and causing damages to tens of thousands of buildings. In the aftermath of the event, the Dutch government created the Delta Works Commission to research the causes and effects of floods. They had to develop flood risk assessments to visualize the full extent of the inundation and to develop countermeasures to prevent such disasters in the future by applying rigorous risk standards in the execution of the Delta project, including dikes, channels, dams, and ultimately the famous storm surge barrier Mesland Ketting close to the port of Rotterdam.
True, now Netherlands is a perfect model of how effective structural prevention strategies for long-term benefits are.
The 1953 flood also caused devastation in Belgium and in the United Kingdom. The latter understood the need on raising sea level rise standards, concluded in the Thames Barrier Program on May 1984. Both countries act independently to reduce the risk of flooding.
Sorry for interrupting, but what about cross-border and transborder risk collaboration? Is it common nowadays? And when is needed?
Every country in the world, except isolated islands of course, is somehow involved in transboundary risk collaboration. In particular, countries that share major basins and ecosystems. For example, the Danube River is the second longest river in Europe and flows through 10 countries, more than any other river in the world. The drainage basin, which originates in the Black Forest of Germany and discharges into the Black Sea via the Danube Delta in Romania and Ukraine, extends into 9 more countries. Therefore, the Danube is vital to maintain the environmental stability of Central and Eastern Europe, habitat of numerous species and plants. As a result, the International Commission for the Protection of the Danube River was founded in 1994. To serve as a platform for cooperation and coordination within the countries, in an effort to recognize the importance of sustainable water resources management, trade, and flood hazard in the Delta. Since then, transboundary collaboration is mandatory, facilitating communication, capacity building, and data sharing between countries, strengthening the region to tackle any situation.
If I'm not mistaken, I would say that international commissions definitely helped to get the edge from slow national bureaucratic procedures into effective action, right?
Exactly. This mechanism pushes countries to overcome barriers such as legal and governmental differences, communication difficulties, social and cultural differences, and economic disparities to work effectively together. This is not easy, but it's possible. There is no doubt that effective teamwork brings success to the entire countries and organizations as well. However, lack of communication can lead to international conflicts or even wars.
Wars? No way.
I'm being serious. Just have a look at Lake Chad, the world's most complex humanitarian disaster. Back at the time, the lake, surrounded by Chad, Cameroon, Niger, and Nigeria, contained fresh water that was provided to approximately 70 million people. Today, 95% has shrunk, leading to a domino effect. Reduction in water levels led to a decrease in algae and fish species, which led to food shortages, which led to conflict and famine crises across the region, which led to massive migration from the area, and so on. Uncontrolled growth of human population and unsustainable water extraction practices from all countries, exacerbated by droughts, were the main factors responsible to stress the groundwater recovery, exceeding its limits, resulting in an ecological catastrophe. Attempts to replenish Lake Chad since 1929 have not succeeded because of conflict affairs between countries and bureaucracy.
Very interesting. Now that we are talking about transboundary conflict, maybe you should mention to the audience the water rooms video you showed me earlier.
Oh yes, that's a good one. The Water Rooms is an original initiative from the United Nations World War Assessment Program of UNESCO that consists in 5 animated movies to encourage learning about fresh water resources and their responsible management in the context of sustainable development. The video, War or Peace, highlights water as a potential source of conflict or cooperation, how civilizations drown when others modify the river course, or how, as humans, we monopolize the resource for ourselves even if our neighbors need it. It is pretty neat. I will include the link on the website and post so you can have a look.
Sounds great! Now it's time to go listen to My Voice 120. We will be back very soon in Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More.
Hello everyone, my name is Esteban Sanchez Canepa.
And I am Mustafa Musa.
And we are co-founders of SADIM, a technology-based company that creates novel sensing technology to address the most common natural hazard on the planet, floods, especially on urban areas.
During a flood incident on a city, there is a lack of information. Information about the floods, the propagation, the severity, and the magnitudes of the floods. This is where SADIM comes into the picture. SADIM is the world's first multi-patented flood information system with active networks already in the field. But how does it work? We deploy our sensor network in an area of concern. The sensors communicate wirelessly and transmit relevant flood information to the concerned parties, so they can optimally warn the public via messages or smartphone applications, allocate their emergency responses, or even control the traffic. With this technology, we're not only reducing the vulnerability of people, but also we reduce the economical losses up to a 30%, which is the money lost on people moving from one place to another during a flood incident.
A big challenge is to make our global leaders aware of the importance of new technologies and innovation in the reduction of the vulnerability of people towards natural hazards. This sometimes creates a barrier for the implementation and adoption of technology-based projects that could prepare our cities for the weather challenges of this century.
We would like to emphasize the importance of technology in flood mitigation and in the increase of the resilience in our cities. Please follow us in our Twitter account, SADIM_WSS, and remember, active citizens build resilient cities.
We are back in Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More. Based on Esteban's speech and considering that I come from an international communication field, I'm curious how early warning systems work. Do I receive a message to my cell phone from the government or local radio station that a tsunami, earthquake or flood is coming?
That is in fact Esteban's idea, but it actually depends on the disaster. For example, during the Global Platform on Disaster Risk Reduction at Cancun 2017, I met an earthquake engineering professional from Mexico, and he explained that a loudspeaker system using Motorola technology was implemented in a county in Mexico City for flood risk prevention. A three-color light, yellow, orange, and red, was integrated within the speaker to show explicitly the level of risk in the area. If yellow, the alarm will activate seldom within 1 minute gaps. If orange, 20 seconds intermittently, and red permanently. This approach has improved the resiliency of the community and proved effective when needed. Now, an expansion of this technology is supposed to be implemented in new locations soon. It is to my understanding that earthquake or tsunami alerts also activate loudspeakers within a range of 30 seconds to 1 minute before impact.
Applied research coupled with innovative technology can bring effective solutions to the table. Let's talk now about earthquake risk assessment. How do you actually make one?
As mentioned in previous shows, hazards can be analyzed in two main ways: deterministically, the most adverse scenario, and probabilistic, all potential scenarios with a likelihood of occurrence. Saying this, the model requires considerable components such as historical records, active geological faults, and the spatial distribution of the elements exposed, including vulnerability and socioeconomic indicators to calculate the economic and human losses. It's more complicated than it sounds, but overall, this is the main concept.
What about flood and environmental risk assessment?
Easy. The digital elevation model, that is basically the 3D resolution of the environment, is integrated within a 2D hydraulic model. Inputs and details are inserted according to the features. For example, the hydrology, a main channel, bridges, levees, streets, and buildings. Then the model is calibrated and validated to provide a flood map, which is needed to draw conclusions and recommendations. Environmental risk assessments consider the impact on the environment caused by any human-related activity that modifies or can cause a response from that action. For example, let's say that I want to build a house in the United States. Keep in mind that each state has their own legislation. But anyway, I will have to provide a comprehensive environmental assessment in the area and building, stating it doesn't have an impact on the ecosystem and that species of trees or animals can be relocated. Now, if you are a businesswoman, or man of course, and you want to build a new real estate close by or in the hills, mountains of Monterey, in addition to the flood and environmental assessments, a landslide hazard assessment must be provided to make sure that the development is safe from exposure of any falling or sliding material and that the surface topography won't be influenced by landslide triggering factors like precipitation, earthquakes, or human activity that won't put in danger the lives of people and infrastructure. And if you don't believe me, you can look at the case studies from Venezuela 1999 or China 1920, in which entire towns were buried as a result of heavy rainfall and earthquake respectively.
I heard that tsunamis are a consequence of earthquakes, am I correct?
Submarine earthquakes have generated about 80% of all tsunami events recorded globally, followed by volcanoes and landslides. Personally, I'm not an expert on tsunami risk assessment, so I won't add on my explanation, but it is true that earthquakes that have been registered in Chile have resulted in tsunamis in East Asia or Japan. The NOAA Center for Tsunami Modeling and Research is developing numerical models for faster and reliable forecast of tsunamis propagating through the ocean. It is a great visualization tool to understand the cascading effects of earthquakes in the sea.
I can imagine. Each week, the full team in Radiofonica grows in excitement because the show has already reached several countries around the world like Italy, USA, Mexico, France, Switzerland, the UK, Saudi Arabia and Chile, just to mention a few. Next week, it's going to be the last show of the year. For this reason, we would like to hear from you. Please write us with your questions and comments about the show to have an open discussion about any relevant topic related to disaster risk reduction. Your opinion matters.
Don't forget to follow wordoc.unistrapg.it and our social media platforms in Facebook and Twitter. And remember, active citizens
build resilient cities.
Goodbye.
Communicating disaster risk reduction, science, and more. with Francisco Fragonio Pena. Active citizens build resilient cities.